Wednesday, June 13th, 2412. Decepticon Field Exercise Staging Area. Aravex, Cybertron. Megatron stood on the stage of a half-ruined amphitheater with his hands folded behind his back, surveying his assembled troops in silence. He didn't look impressed by what he saw, and some of the Decepticons closer to the front fidgeted nervously under his gaze. Truth to tell, the Decepticon army had always been a rather motley lot, for all that they were institutionally more a proper army than the Autobot forces. Apart from the Sky Soldiers, who were all of a standard chassis type, there was too much variation in individual Decepticons' configuration to give them much of a uniform appearance on the parade ground. Today, though, they looked particularly ragtag, with most of them still trying to come to terms with all that had happened over the last few days. Many of them looked shell-shocked, slightly dazed, or warily uncertain. A lot of that, Megatron had to concede, was of his own making. Even 4 centuries after the Battle of Autobot City, most of the Decepticons he saw here before him had been admitted to the Force with his blessing, and the new faces looked for the most part as if they'd been measured by the same standards he'd left behind, which, after so many millennia of war with the Autobots, had not been all that high. Or, to put it less charitably, there were some serious slackjaws out there, gazing dumbly back at him as if they hadn't quite grasped that he wasn't Shockwave. Well, he thought grimly to himself, that's part of why we're here, to weed out the ones who simply can't or won't measure up to the new standards. My Decepticons, he announced suddenly, making a few of those at the front jump in surprise. Today, we begin a 3-day exercise by which I hope to determine your state of military readiness. We can hardly expect to be accepted as Cybertron's protectors in our current state of disarray. I shall be watching throughout these war games to see who has what it takes to serve in my army, and who has not. He let that ominous last part sit for a moment before continuing briskly, For stage one of the game, we will divide into 2 teams. Soundwave. Soundwave stepped forward and activated his chest panel holojector, displaying a giant map of the ruined Aravex sector.
Force Red will proceed to the east end of the district,
he said, illuminating a subsection of the map in the appropriate color.
Force Blue will do the same in the west. The teams will have 6 hours to establish headquarters and await orders. Each of you has received a personal flashgram containing your team assignment and applicable communications protocols for use during the game. No further information will be available at game start.
Thank you, Soundwave. You may withdraw.
As you command, Megatron.
The assembled Decepticons consulted their comm systems to check their team assignments, as Soundwave transformed to vehicle mode and left the staging area. Megatron was pleased to see that they at least knew enough to divide into their 2 forces without prompting, the Reds going to one side of the amphitheater, the Blues to the other.
You will notice, Megatron told them, that there are no rank or function assignments specified within your teams. Those will be for your team commanders to determine. I wish to see how well you can function in a fluid battlefield situation with minimal guidance. For phase one of the game, I will command Force Blue myself, he went on. The commander of Force Red will be...
Megatron swept his eyes over the ranks of the Red Team, then half-smiled and announced,
Thundercracker.
Thundercracker blinked and pointed to himself in the international me gesture. His nearest teammates drew back slightly to stare at him in astonishment. A few members of Blue laughed.
Is something funny, run amok?
Megatron inquired icily, cutting off the laughter at once. No, Megatron, Runamuck replied after a moment's awkward pause.
Good. Because these games are no laughing matter. We Decepticons have laughed off our true purpose for far too long.
He held Runamuck's nervous gaze for a moment, then addressed all the assembled bots.
For 5 million years, we Decepticons have been sliding into a morass of brutality, rapacity, even mindless cruelty. Throughout the galaxy, our name is a byword for evil's worst excesses.
He made a gesture of flat denial.
No more. Primus has called all his children home for a reason, my Decepticons. And that reason is this. This galaxy stands on the brink of a terrible darkness. An evil lurks in the shadows of the rim that may be beyond sapient understanding.
Leaning forward slightly, Megatron preempted any mutterings of puzzlement that this statement might have elicited from his troops with four grimly intoned words that, coming from him in the way that they did, struck fear into the spark of every Decepticon present.
I have seen it.
He let that sink in for a moment, then straightened and went on.
For the sake of the entire galaxy, we Decepticons must again be the force which joined hands with the Autobot Resistance to throw off the Quintesson yoke and lead Cybertron into her first golden age. We will no longer be the ravagers and despoilers history calls us. We will have discipline. We will have order. We will be professionals. Starting right here, right now, all of us will recapture the glory and honor of the Decepticon name, or we will die trying.
For 5 seconds of deafening silence, Megatron held all his Decepticons in rapt attention, as he had eons before, in the days before the Dark Times. Then he broke the spell by saying in a more briskly commanding tone,
"This briefing is concluded. Report to your assigned areas and begin preparations. Further instructions will be relayed by Soundwave from the Strategic Exercise Command Center. Oh, and one more thing. If any of you are looking at this live fire exercise and thinking it's a perfect opportunity to stage a few accidents and even up some old scores, remember what I said about professionalism. Jeopardizing your team's performance for personal reasons is not acceptable. Beyond that,"
Megatron smiled darkly,
"may the best bots win."
Standing straight and sweeping them with one last penetrating gaze, he concluded,
"The eyes of the galaxy are upon us. I will accept nothing short of excellence. Decepticons, dismissed."
Airy Productions Unlimited and Imagination Unlimited present Undocumented Features Future Imperfect Transformers Cybertron Reloaded Issue Number 5 Intrusion Countermeasures by Benjamin D. Hutchins, hi, that's me, and Philip Jeremy Moyer. Autobase Communications Center, Iacon. Ironhide turned to Optimus Prime, his battle-scarred face set in a frown.
"Nice little speech, but talk's always been cheap with Megatron."
Prime nodded thoughtfully.
"Agreed, old friend, but let's try to keep an open mind."
"Oh, my mind's open," Ironhide assured his commander. "But I'm keeping my safeties off, too, till he backs up his fancy words with some actions."
He cast a skeptical glance across the ComSen control room toward Soundwave.
"Can't say I like having him in here, either."
"This is the logical place for him to be," Prowl chipped in. "From here, he can monitor both sides of the game and keep us posted on everything that goes on, and sending him here is an unexpected olive branch. Megatron didn't say it in so many words, but he's basically a hostage." He indicated the guards on the entrances and the various Autobots posted at other consoles around the big mission-control-style room. Even Soundwave would be hard-pressed to fight his way out of here if Megatron did anything to change his shoot-no-shoot status. They've both got to know that.
"Yeah, I know, Prowl,"
said Ironhide. Still feels wrong. Reminds me of the time we came back to the Ark and found him plugged into Teletran 1.
You think it feels wrong to you? Look at Blaster, said Prowl. If he ignores that end of the room any harder, it'll cease to exist.
They've got a lot of history, Prime agreed. None of it's good. But Blaster knows his job.
Raising his voice slightly, he called across the room, Blaster, we're leaving for the observation area. Blaster swiveled and gave his leader a thumbs up.
We're buttoned down and loving the sound here, Prime. I'll keep a channel open for you.
Prime nodded, turned, and left the room with Ironhide and Prowl in tow. Out in the Iacon Central Plaza, the first Autobot guards were mustered and ready. These were Optimus Prime's elite, the closest any Autobot Prime had ever had to a Praetorian guard, the bots who had gone to Earth with him all those millennia ago, less a few, like Red Alert, who were needed too much at their jobs to participate in this gesture. They were all shined up for the occasion, their weapons cleaned and racked with greater than usual care, and they stood in neat ranks waiting for their leader.
Is everyone ready? Prime asked.
When he received answers in the affirmative, he went on, Remember, we're going to play this straight for as long as the Decepticons do. Be alert and ready, but don't start anything. He tilted his head slightly as he noticed a small figure standing near Sideswipe.
Colonel Katsuragi, are you joining us?
If you don't mind, Misato replied. I'm intrigued, and I don't have much else to do while our equipment's in the shop.
It might get dangerous, Prime told her, but Misato only smiled slightly.
I can do dangerous, she said. She'll keep me out of trouble, Prime, said Sideswipe, drawing a laugh from his colleagues.
Very well, said Prime. Happy to have you along. Autobots, transform and roll out.
Five hours later, Aravex. Greetings, sports fans. I'm Eject, and with me is my good pal Slamdance, and we are here, live, aboard the good ship Cosmos, 130,000 feet above the Aravex Expanse. Down below us are many of the Decepticon Army's up-and-coming warriors, scattered among the scrap piles and building shells, ready to give their all in this, the first ever open Decepticon operations battle.
This is indeed a landmark occasion, Eject. Never before have the Decepticons publicly announced wargame operations, nor, for that matter, issued warnings beforehand as to the time and place. This is an unprecedented move on the part of the Supreme Commander of the Decepticons, and may well be indicative of the changes coming for Megatron's new order.
Right you are, Slamdance. Unless, of course, it's just the opening move in an elaborate Decepticon scheme that will see Cybertron plunge back into unending war.
There is always that possibility, Eject. But let's look on the bright side. We've got great seats either way.
One of the things Megatron had always admired, albeit somewhat grudgingly, about Autobots was their ability to maintain an even strain. He'd known Autobots to make jokes on the way to the scrap heap. Now, listening with half a channel to the patter of the two commentators, he watched his blue team complete construction of their headquarters defenses. He'd put three of the Constructicons with each team, so as to take Devastator off the table, and give each team some building expertise for this phase. Each team also had a dedicated comm officer, one of a pair of twins sparked under Shockwave's command, both of whom would be coordinating with Soundwave in his role as overall observer and wargame referee.
Feedback to Megatron, came the voice of his team's twin. Message from Soundwave.
Proceed, feedback.
Preparation time limit has expired. Proceed with phase two. Message ends.
Acknowledged. Megatron to all Blue Force Decepticons. The exercise has begun. Scouting teams, move out. I want to know where the Reds have set up their command post within the hour.
Autobase Comsen, Iacon.
Looks like the show's started, Blaster observed.
Sylvie nodded. Yep. Probably not going to be anything really interesting happening for a while, though. Blaster peered at one of the monitors. Looks like the Reds are making some moves already. Can't say Megatron's decision didn't surprise me, but... He studied the screen for a moment longer, then said, It looks like Thundercracker's on top of things so far. Didn't know he had it in him. Yeah, I've read his file. He's... Well, if I'm being honest, I'd have figured he was just a thug based on that. Certainly not leadership material. Same here. Based on long personal experience, Blaster said ruefully. But it looks like he's doing okay so far. He shook his head. Man, this whole thing is messing with my head, I don't mind telling you. This war has taken some weird turns in the past, but this is the weirdest thing ever. You think it's for real? Sylvie asked. I don't know, Blaster admitted. Half of me agrees with Ironhide. Megatron's up to something. We ought to take him down before he finishes setting it up, whatever it is. But the other half of me wants to believe. Because I remember what this place was like before the war. I wouldn't be an Autobot if I didn't hope this was the real thing. Sylvie smiled. Still tough to realign your worldview so quickly. Blaster nodded, shooting a quick, almost furtive glance across at Soundwave. Yeah, he said. Real tough. He sat back and simulated a sigh. Maybe I'm just getting old. You said something yesterday about something weird going on in the ether, Sylvie remarked, tactfully changing the subject. What was that about? Oh, that. Bunch of anomalous network traffic in Hydrax. It stopped while we were reacting to Megatron's announcement. Haven't seen a trace of it since. He shrugged. Probably a bad signaling module someplace. A lot of Cybertron's still a mess. Even the mostly cleaned up places like Hydrax, below the surface. We'll track it down eventually. I think I just got so excited because we were all on edge anyway, jumping at shadows. Speaking of which, where's your other half today? Sylvie looked around the room as if just noticing that she was the only human there. I don't know, she admitted slowly. Then, with a look of slowly dawning dismay, she went on, But I have a suspicion. Aerovex. Pris Morgan watched while Megatron directed the opening moves, then collapsed her electro-binoculars and tucked them into one of her belt pouches. She was in the middle of a simulated war zone without authorization, after all. It wouldn't do to get so focused on her distant target that she lost awareness of her immediate surroundings. She was on the upper level of a ruined building whose original purpose she could no longer discern. It offered an excellent vantage point from which to observe the blue command post, and also a good, quick, and discreet exit, should a Red Scout have the same idea. Pris had no intention of interfering with the game, she just wanted to watch. As she watched the blue team Decepticons at work below, her ear caught the sound of someone entering the structure from below. Whoever it was moving very quietly indeed, astonishingly quietly, if the new arrival was a Transformer, and she had only seconds to decide whether to try for concealment or make her escape. She opted for the former, curious as to who it was, since it was unlikely that anyone from the Red side had reached this area yet. A moment later, an indistinct figure emerged from the empty lift shaft at the back of the room and crept forward, keeping low. For a second, Pris thought he was using thermoptic camouflage, until she took a closer look and saw that he was just making very effective use of a conventional urban camo overspray, and once she knew that, she recognized the silhouette immediately. Bumblebee, she whispered, easing out from her cover. The Autobot intelligence chief turned his head and spotted her, but didn't look particularly surprised. He eased closer, moving almost silently, and settled down at the edge of the broken wall, about where she had been, to begin his own observations.
With a small gesture, he indicated that she should move up beside him, then offered her a comlink cable so that they could converse silently through her neuroprocessor. "I see I'm not the only one who had the idea of a little unauthorized close-up observation," he said cheerfully. "Aren't the cons going to be suspicious if you're not with Prime's party at the official observation point?" Pris replied. Bumblebee smirked slightly. "Nah, nobody ever notices if I'm not there. It's part of my job. I'm like the wind. Or as much like the wind as a bright yellow 69 Dodge can be, anyway." They watched the Decepticons at work for several minutes in silence. Then Pris said, "Now that you mention it, there's something I've been wondering."
"Shoot."
"I've seen file hollows of you. You used to be a classic Beetle." Bumblebee nodded.
"Yep, I liked that alt. It was nice and unobtrusive, which was a very good thing at the time."
"Why'd you change?"
"I got sued by Volkswagen for trademark infringement."
Pris blinked. "Seriously?"
"Uh-huh."
"Doesn't Volkswagen own Lamborghini? Why isn't Sideswipe in the same boat?"
Bumblebee shrugged.
"Scrapped if I know. Probably because he looks good on the posters." The Autobot scanned the blue camp one more time, then shifted his weight and started getting up.
"Well, nothing much going on here right now. I'm going to head over and see if I can get an optic on what the Reds are up to. You want a lift?"
"Nah, I'm going to stay on Megatron for a while."
"Okay, suit yourself. Just keep your head down, yeah? Human armor's not too tough."
"I bet you say that to all the girls," said Pris with a smile. She disconnected the cable, gave him a wave as he left, and then settled down to keep watching. Elsewhere in Erevex, Thundercracker looked up from the planning table his half of the Constructicons had set up and surveyed his base camp. It struck him as slightly odd that he wasn't more nervous. After all, he was going up against Megatron himself now, if only in simulation. It was for fear of doing just that thing that he'd stayed a Decepticon as long as he had if he wanted to be entirely honest with himself. And now here he was. He couldn't decide whether he was being given the chance of a lifetime, for reasons he couldn't even begin to guess at, or being set up to fail. He didn't know, but he'd decided at the outset that if the latter were the case, he wasn't going to just roll over and go quietly. Thundercracker had never had much pride, but the events of the last couple of weeks had kindled something like it in him. He'd seen his most forlorn hope, that someone would come along and light the Decepticon's darkest hour, come to pass with Shockwave's destruction and the reclaiming of Vilnicron. Megatron's speech at the opening of the games had stirred his spark in a way he hadn't known it could be stirred, reminding him of that long-ago day cycle when he'd decided to join the Grand Army of the Decepticons in the first place. In such a climate, he was determined to give it his very best shot. If that wasn't enough, it wasn't enough, but Megatron would never be able to say he hadn't tried. If Thundercracker was nervous about anything now, it was the fact that not all of his comrades on the Red Team felt the same drive to succeed. They weren't motivated, they weren't inspired, they weren't on his side. Most were doing their duty, but only that. They clearly didn't think he had what it would take to lead them to victory. And a few were just sitting around, in spite of the instructions he'd given them, flouting his authority outright. What would Megatron do? He wondered. And the answer came to him in an instant's reflection. Megatron would make an example. "Run amok," he said. The white battle charger turned his head, but didn't rise from where he slouched on a vaguely divan-shaped piece of rubble.
"Yo!"
"I believe I told you to scout Sector 12," said Thundercracker, keeping his voice calm and reasonable as he strolled around the situation table toward Runamuck's perch.
"Uh-huh," Runamuck replied, unconcerned.
"Then why are you still here?" Thundercracker asked. "Did you think I meant for you to do it later?" Runamuck snorted.
Screw you, he said. You ain't Megatron, and you ain't the boss of me. That's odd, Thundercracker said. I could have sworn I heard Megatron say I was. Runamuck swung his legs down and turned so he was facing the blue-armored Seeker, but didn't get up. Get real, he said. Do you seriously think Megatron's crazy enough to put you in charge and expect anything to come of it? Even if he is crazy enough to make an alliance with the Autobots? Pfft. This whole thing is a joke, man. Really. Thundercracker stopped a couple of paces away. Behind him, at the periphery of the camp, a few of the other Reds paused in what they were doing to watch the situation unfold. Then why am I not laughing? Thundercracker continued calmly. Runamuck sat back against the wall, folded his arms, and replied, "'Cause you ain't smart enough to have a sense of humor." Thundercracker stood looking down at the mutinous battle charger for a few moments. Then, without a word, he turned, walked a few steps away, and then transformed and took to the air, vanishing from sight in moments. On the far side of the camp, the Red Team's three Constructicons looked at each other. "'Did he just leave?' Scavenger asked. "'Okay, wow,' Bonecrusher said. "'I wasn't expecting that.' Runamuck just returned to his lounging position, satisfied that that was the last he was going to hear of that foolishness. Thundercracker never had possessed very big bearings. "'Wait, what was that noise?' "'Aw, scrap,' he muttered, bolting up from his perch and dropping into vehicle mode with the eye-blink speed that made him a battle charger. There was an overhang of wrecked highway about a quarter click away that would provide decent cover, but he was out of time. Thundercracker streaked by overhead, and a crack-a-thoom, so loud it defied comprehension, slammed down on Runamuck, shattering his car mode's windows and crashing his audio stack. He swerved out of control and smashed into the column holding up his intended cover, returning to robot mode on impact and sprawling senseless among the rubble. A moment later, Thundercracker returned to camp, landing next to Runamuck's battered form in robot mode. He reached down and lifted the battle charger by the neck, holding him clear of the ground, and waited for him to reset. "Are your backup audio receptors functioning, Runamuck?" he asked, his voice still perfectly calm.
Affirmative, Commander Thundercracker,
Runamuck replied groggily. Thanks to you, I've just revealed our position to the Blues, if Megatron has the presence of mind to have someone scanning for acoustic anomalies, which of course he has. We now have to relocate our base camp. This will set us back several hours. He smiled coldly. So I'm afraid there won't be any time for you to report to repair. You'll just have to get by on your backup systems until the games conclude. Understood?
Understood, Commander.
Good. Thundercracker released his hold and let Runamuck fall to the ground. Then he crouched down, leaned over the fallen battle charger, and went on. While we're having such a fruitful exchange of information, Runamuck, understand this as well. You're right. I'm not Megatron, and you're not Starscream. Cop that attitude with me again before the end of these games, and I'll scrap you. Satisfied, Thundercracker straightened and said crisply as he strode away, "Pull yourself together and get started breaking down the perimeter scanners." Scavenger and Bonecrusher, without being told, started to dismantle the situation table and load it onto Longhaul.
"He gets style points for that," Bonecrusher observed.
"Seriously," Longhaul agreed. Wedge Defense Force, Air Station Cybertron. Autobase, Iacon. The pilot of the gleaming silver SF-15D Cosmo Eagle prototype that had just arrived stood up from her seat, pulled off her classic Belcom Valkyrie helmet, and shook out her long blonde hair, then flipped down the boarding ladder and disembarked.
"Welcome back to Cybertron, General Courier," said the dark-haired woman in the smart gray suit who had come out from the aerospace terminal to meet her. "Good to be back, Alexis," Patricia Terror Courier replied, grinning. "Orbital control was touchy. I guess I picked the wrong week to show up on Cybertron with a fighter that looks like an F-15, she observed with a thumb over her shoulder and a smirk. "We always knew this retro-tech thing would cause trouble, but that wasn't really what we had in mind." "You've returned at a very interesting time," Alexis agreed. "Jetfire has a full briefing for you. And for the record, your timing's not too bad," she added with a grin. "We might not be able to keep up to the original testing timetable, but you and the Getter team are still likely to have plenty to do in the next little while." Aerovex. Megatron stood at the crest of a small ridge, actually a fault scarp thrown out by the buckling of two massive plates of ground armor in some ancient bombing raid, looking off toward the southeast.
"Razorclaw, report," he said into his comm.
"We've reached the origin point," Razorclaw's voice replied. "There are signs that there was an encampment here recently, but they're gone now. They must have pulled out as soon as they knew they'd given away their position." Megatron nodded.
"Excellent," he said. "I look forward to learning why Thundercracker found it necessary to do so in the first place. Track them to their new location and report back. Do not engage without my authorization."
"Understood."
"Megatron out."
The Decepticon leader closed the channel and stood for a moment longer, looking across the Aerovex wastes. As he'd hoped, Thundercracker was showing a glimmer of ability. More than a glimmer, perhaps. He had often wondered what it would take to make the Seeker rise to his potential and become more than the simple thug he pretended to be. Now, it appeared, he knew. Satisfactory. He caught movement out of the corner of his optic and began to turn, powering up his systems for combat. Megatron had suspected that going off on his own, presenting himself as a target, would attract the attention of some dissident or another in the blue ranks. He'd been rather curious to see which one of them would dare to try him first. Now he saw it was Windrazor, one of the new air units sparked during Galvatron's reign, one of those he'd tagged as a potential troublemaker during his initial review of the files. But though the gray-armored jet warrior was standing on the high ground of a half-ruined building's exposed upper story, his weapon leveled, for some reason he didn't attack. While Megatron watched, puzzled, Windrazor stood motionless for a few moments, then toppled forward, bounced off a jagged outcrop of an intermediate floor, and crashed to the ground at his feet, twitching feebly. Megatron looked down at him for a moment, bemused, and then glanced back up to Windrazor's former position. There was someone else up there, the silhouette that of an early model Sky Soldier, as they were before Earth, all detail lost in the gloom of the wrecked building's interior.
"Show yourself," Megatron commanded. "I'm disappointed, Megatron," a familiar voice rasped from the shadows. "I'd hoped that if you had learned anything from me, it would be to always watch your back."
Then, stepping fully back into the darkness, the interloper transformed and streaked away out the other side of the ruined building, leaving behind a sardonic, drifting chuckle. Megatron stood looking after him for a moment, and then his face took on a darkly satisfied little smile.
"Excellent," he murmured.
"What was that about?" wondered Pris from her latest hide, 100 yards away. Thursday, June 14th, 2412. Autobase Comsen, Iacon. Decepticon War Games, Day 2. "Morning, gang," Sylvie announced as she strolled into the comm center, a breakfast sandwich and orange juice from the commissary in hand. She wasn't really expecting a response, and indeed she didn't get one. Everyone within earshot of the entrance was busy, some monitoring various surveillance systems around Aerovex, others handling routine comm traffic with Cybertron's various outposts and colonies, and still others engrossed in tasks sufficiently arcane that Sylvie didn't recognize them at a quick glance. Soundwave was still exactly where he'd been when she left the night before, hunched over the corner console with Rumble on one side and Frenzy on the other, ready to assist in whatever capacity their boss required. He didn't even look up, nor did Frenzy, though Rumble turned and gave her a high sign before returning to his work. Sylvie smiled to herself and walked around the upper-level catwalk, passing consoles at which various Autobot comm techs were at work, and catching snippets of their conversations, mostly meaningless without context, as she went by. To Sector 217 for routine. Was right there a second ago. Check it again. Readum's progress immediately to investigate. Don't care how many credits. Mitted 4 and 8 are. She reached the console at the end where Blaster was, and had to stifle a laugh at the sight. Despite the fact that it was manned by a 20-foot-tall robot, the station looked like that of any human console jockey after an all-nighter, littered with casually discarded data solids, carelessly stacked, and in some cases overturned, energy drink empties, and crumpled snack packets. "Geez, Blaster, have some pride," she said, stepping off the catwalk to the Minicon-scale station next to his. Surveying the debris, she asked, "Didn't you even stop to recharge?" Blaster jerked his thumb over his shoulder. "Not while Blue and Gruesome's still in my comm center."
"I can hear you, you know,"
Soundwave announced without turning around. Blaster groaned. "He's been like that all night. I swear to Primus, he's trying to get me to crack." "Right," Silver replied dubiously. "And the pile of Kremzy cola empties by your workstation has nothing to do with it." "Hey, I gotta stay awake somehow." Sylvie shook her head and sighed as she took her own seat. "Whatever. Fill me in with what's happened while I was out." "Been reasonably quiet, thank Primus," Blaster reported. "The cons actually seem to be having a war game. Either Megatron's for real, or he's gotten more patient than he used to be. In the old days, if he was up to something, he'd have sprung it by now. Instead, he's playing it straight, so far. Both teams have made a couple of probing strikes. There's been one fairly big firefight in the Central District, but for the most part, they're still firming up their positions. I think Thundercracker's waiting Megatron out, trying to force him onto the offensive. Say this for the boy, he's not as dumb as he looks. He knows the Defender always has an advantage." Sylvie nodded. "What about the rest of Cybertron?" Blaster shrugged. "Same as it ever was. Red Alert and Hot Rod are running extra patrols on the non-aligned districts near Vilnicron, but there hasn't been a peep. Airspace is clear. One of the colonies has gone silent, but it's probably just comm problems. They've had a lot of trouble with their HW transmitter these last few months. IPO actually sent a consultant out there to help them out with it last month, but I guess they're still having issues. Axelon's checking it out." He spread his hands. "Other than that, big pile of nothing." Just as he said it, an alarm sounded at the other end of the room. Blaster swiveled to see Soundwave bend a little more intently over his console, then turn and announce in the most urgent of his limited range of vocal tones,
"Blaster, alert. Unauthorized network traffic detected. Protocol unknown. Origination unknown. Purpose unknown. Probable planetary network incursion. Request to confirm."
Rivalry or not, something in the Decepticon's flattened tone told Blaster that this was something to take seriously. Pivoting, he punched keys on his own console, syncing it to what Soundwave was displaying. Then his optics went wide at the sight of the frantic data stream this revealed. "Whoa, okay, that's weird," he muttered. "Like what we saw from Hydrax, only more so." Then, in a more carrying voice, "Soundwave, unlock your console for crosslink. Let's see if we can get a better idea what we're dealing with."
"Affirmative."
Sylvie sat back and watched them work for a few moments, impressed by the professionalism both comm officers displayed. She knew they were very old foes, set in perpetual opposition by the simple fact of their functions and their respective forces. At least twice that she knew of, they'd dueled to the death, or intended to, before circumstances beyond their control had separated them. And now, in the face of this unidentified weirdness on the net, they could use the long familiarity that opposition had bred in them to work together instead. Smiling a private smile, she switched her own console to monitor mode, and watched them work from the other side, observing the network traffic and the two Transformers' attempts to get a handle on it. Watching the green hollow phosphor flow, she could instinctively envision the information structures it represented, watching with avid fascination as Blaster and Soundwave traced connections, rerouted traffic, threw up emergency firewalls, and sought to contain the incursion while simultaneously working to understand it. Containment came faster. Within 5 minutes, they managed to lock down the network district the anomaly was occurring in, preventing it from spreading to neighboring sectors of Cybertron's sprawling infosphere. But they got no closer to figuring out what it was. "The hell is going on in there?" Blaster wondered aloud. "It's almost like some kind of self-replicating virus, but the vectors are all wrong."
"Unknown," Soundwave replied. "Attempts to isolate single process for runtime dissection. Unsuccessful. Alert. Anomalous data structure still growing."
Sylvie shook herself out of her fascination, switched her console to active mode, and linked it to the others. Passive observation wasn't in her nature at a time like this.